Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Winter Film Fest Federation. A whole month of movies with prominent scenes and video stores. We got VHS tapes. We got 90s indie cinema. We got underappreciated women filmmakers. Hey, it's the 90s. This week, we barely have any of those things, because we're watching a movie signaling the end of the video store era. Move over, video stores, because Redbox and Netflix are about to body slam ya. It's Michelle Gondry's 2008 heartfelt absurdist comedy, Be Kind Rewind, starring Jack Black, Haseen Bey, Danny Glover, and Mia Farrow. Ready to get sweated all up in this ring?
Does that sound like a wrestling thing?
Hello, and welcome back to Stone Cold Ryan's Winter Film Fest Federation, a month of prominent scenes in video stores, a.k.a. Hey, it's the 90s. I'm your host this month for this little specialty run, Ryan, you know, and just wanted to check out there and see if your VHS is our NTSC, which is one of my favorite lines. But joining me today is our own Mike.
We can't prove that Dave's Waller was ever in the store because he was never real.
That's funny. And then, of course, our own store manager guy trying to switch formats on us, Dave.
We'll be back with all the necessary documents.
That was the one you chose? That you had in trouble to kick?
I just thought that line was so funny. These guys are so serious. They're like, all right, we'll be back with all the necessary documents.
My report card.
And my 10 favorite movies.
That was funny. Yeah, that was good.
And something that shows my address, like a bill or something.
Well, we watched for the festival, and this was actually kind of just a combination of a listener request and that fit the format or fit the programming. So it's this is our very own, is this Kara, right? Asked to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And
she asked for a sweeted podcast version of Be Kind Rewind.
Oh, damn. Well, so we'll have to do another one after this that's sweeted. This is the real one.
Yeah, if you listen to this, you got to be careful about copyright infringement.
So actually, the way to listen to this, you download it, then get magnetized, then get erased off of your listening device, and then make your own. That's how you of this episode.
So I guess technically you'll never really hear the episodes.
That's true.
That's why it's so rare.
But yeah. So yeah, Be Kind Rewind. This was, what year was it? 2008? This is Michelle. Is it Michelle? I need to ask our French guy. Is it Michelle or Mikkel? Or how do you say the name? Micah?
Yeah, and the French pronunciation is Mikael. No, Mikael. It's Michelle.
Yeah. Michelle Gondry, this is his follow-up after Science of Sleep, after his kind of Eternal Sunshine, Science of Sleep, and then this.
That was the movie he did, Eternal Sunshine. And I'm like, I know the name. I know he's linked to a pretty big movie. I just couldn't remember.
And he did that one with Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah, but he also won the Oscar he was one of the co-writers on the movie too. So, and that's what won Best Screenplay, Original Screenplay.
And that's like definitely his his biggest, like, and most critically acclaimed movie. Like, he's had like a weird career. Like, he also did the Green Hornet movie,
and that was was his last Hollywood movie. And he's gone back to making some friends. I haven't seen any of them since the Green Hornet. That was the last movie of his I've seen.
And I don't think he's done a movie in a while.
Well, he has a few. What did he see? I was just looking at his list. And this is one of this is like one of the guys. This was one of my guys. I feel like at this time. 2015 was the last movie. I've never even heard of it. It's called Microbe and Gasoline.
French comedy film. Have anybody heard any of these movies he's done after Green Hornet? We and the I, Mood Indigo, and Microbe. He's fallen off he had a crazy run. Science of Sleep was not really this big thing, but I remember going to see it in theaters because I was excited.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wouldn't say he had like a crazy run so much as like he really, like Eternal Sunshine was just a huge thing, and I don't know if he ever like,
well, this is
hit another home run like that.
Well, the thing is he had such a lead up to it because he's made so many of the best music videos of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a music video director that, like, when I was getting into movies and filmmaking, I was just like, Spike Jonze and this guy are my guy. You know, these are like the people I look up to the most. Like, one of my favorite music videos of all time is Stereogram's Walkie Talkie Man. I don't know if you've ever seen that music video. But it's like all done with yarn. He did like the I Fell in Love with the Girl, White Stripes video, a bunch of Bjork music videos.
Oh, he did that one? The Lego one?
The Legos, yeah.
Oh, man. That's a big one. Yeah, he did the video for Everlong by Foo Fighters. He's done tons of videos.
He was like
the Bjork guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a bunch of White Stripes videos.
He did the Around the World video, Daft Punk. Oh, my God.
Huge.
Wow.
Like, you know, like is it Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground? Is that the one that they did?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many. Hardest Button to Button, that's the one. Like, that's one of my favorite videos, too. Or it's just like them,
Knives
like,
Out, the Radiohead one.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
I wonder how residuals work with music videos, especially
these days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I hope they get something from, like, YouTube.
Well,
plays.
I would think, like, you know, if it's played on YouTube, or I should say ChadTube or anything like that, they would get a little something, right?
I hope so.
I would think.
But I don't know. Maybe that's like studio owns that. I don't know what it is with directors with residuals with music video. That's a good question.
I bet he's doing okay.
I bet so. I mean, he does like, that's a great run of hundreds of videos, basically, or at least 100 or something. It seems like it. But, and then got into these making movies and was like such a visual guy. And you're like, this is like one of the new, like, this is the new Wes Anderson. You know, it was like that kind of thing. And then he kind of fell off maybe someday he'll come back around with something that really pops. But maybe he's big in France still. I don't know. But this was a movie I was looking forward to a lot. And I think originally, I don't think I've seen it since I saw it in theaters. And I remember liking a lot of it, and especially the lead up to the movie. I think I remember more than the movie itself. But I wanted to see what you guys thought about this movie. Maybe if you ever saw it when it came out or...
I saw it when it came out, too, because I loved Eternal Sunshine. And so I also, I think like you were saying, like this was definitely Michel Gondry is someone in high school or like basically after I saw Eternal Sunshine, I was like, OK, well, I'm going to watch Spike Jonze movie and Michel Gondry movies now. And I saw The Science of Sleep afterwards, which I like a lot. I haven't seen that in years. But
I don't even remember what it's about other than the visuals. I can only remember the visuals, which is kind of cool.
I think it was like a guy I remember it was a guy living in Spain and like he was like a weird scientist or something maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I remember liking it. And then this came out and I remember seeing it and I remember like liking it, but liking it a lot less than Eternal Sunshine or Science of Sleep. And I haven't seen it since I saw it for the show, but that was kind of like I definitely at the time didn't feel the same way I did about it as Eternal Sunshine or Science of Sleep, but I did like enjoy it, and especially the visual stuff where they were reenacting the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what about did we see this, Dave, or do you remember seeing this when it
came
out?
We might have seen this together or rented it. I can't remember because you and I were working at Hollywood Video at the time this came out. Mm-hmm. Or was this that time were you still working there, or was this during the brief little period you were gone?
It may have been the in-between times.
Okay. Well, I remember renting this because obviously, you know, it appealed to me. It's like, oh, video store stuff. Awesome. VHS. Cool. I think the first time I watched it, it was hard for me to get over the really goofy comedy in like the first third with like Jack Black getting electrocuted trying to sabotage power stations. Like I didn't know. I don't think I knew quite what to make of it. And I think that kind of soiled my enjoyment of the rest of the movie then. Now, though, watching it, I still think, you know, it's funny. It's I didn't know that the director was French, but that kind of makes sense now because it does sort of have that slapsticky humor that you see that the French love, you know, with like Jerry Lewis and stuff like that. So that kind of makes more sense now. But the slapsticky, weird, goofy Looney Tunes humor in the first third didn't ruin it off me this time. I think this movie. I don't know about the next movie we're going to watch, which we'll reveal at the end of this episode. But compared to, I think out of the ones we've watched so far, this one got to me the most because, you know,
oh, wow.
It has a lot of heart. It's about community and it's about something I love, which is video stores and VHS and all that. And
yeah,
I got teary eyed at the end of this movie.
I think I feel the same way you did, Dave, where I was just like, I don't know if about this, but I was like, I like bawled at the end of the movie.
It was really sad. It was bittersweet, but beautiful.
I couldn't believe it because I feel the same way. I was like, oh man, this is weird. Like, this movie feels like it's like kind of it feels like a sweeted movie, and maybe that's intentional.
Yes, it does.
Where there's this like, it feels like chunks are kind of taken out or like they like stop. Like it feels like a different movie, like you said, after the first third or maybe first, you know, 20 minutes or something. I don't know. Like it. It's very, and the music changes, I feel like it's very weird movie. And
well, it's almost, it's kind of like, I kind of view it because like pretty much all the characters in this movie are kind of like, you know, quirky and like misfits and stuff like that. And that's firmly established in the first third. So I don't mind it as much now because the whole point is it's like these weirdos that band together for a common goal. And their hearts are all in the right spot. And I don't know. It just sort of supersedes the goofiness for me at the heart of this movie.
So something I was wondering, like, it felt like a lot of the dialogue was improvised. A lot of the, and I did not like that. Like a lot of this movie, like for me, like I had some problems really getting into it this time, and I think a lot of it is like that improvised kind of dialogue that's back and forth. Like a lot of the scenes between Mos Def and Jack Black were like
just kind of going
I feel like a lot of those scenes they remind me of like an SNL sketch in a way or something. Like,
well, SNL is nothing, it's not at all improvised. They don't,
I know, I know it's not improvised. Yeah, but
literally the opposite, sketch comedy.
Yeah, I know it's. I know it's.
And they're reading
out,
cue cards. Yeah,
it's just like
it couldn't be further away from improv.
Sorry, this is the comedy nerd talking. Like SNL is not improv.
I'm aware, but it had like, I don't know. I have to imagine there was not a lot of that dialogue was not in a script, and like they were just kind of like
in situations stuff. And then
I really didn't like that stuff. That's like a big thing for me with this movie, that I think I'm gonna be like the wet blanket on this movie a bit. I didn't really like it, and I liked it less than I think the last time I saw it. But that was like the whole, I feel like I could have liked this movie with a tighter script.
Did you more identified with the guy like, guys, this building is not up to code. You need to at least fix the roof.
Here's the thing. I see what you're saying, Mike, and I can maybe half agree because I was feeling that. But then the thing I didn't remember about this movie was all the backdrop of this jazz stuff going on. This jazz musician that apparently lived in the building,
Fats Waller,
and I'm like, bro, this is a jazz set. This movie is literally like jazz music. Like
it's all about improv.
Hey, that's fine. And like, I love Curb Your Enthusiasm, but like,
yeah, but that's
if
different.
You're doing a jazz solo, you gotta like,
that's different. You know? I feel this movie is like, I feel like it has different flows throughout it. Like where there's like parts where I'm like, whoa, this isn't working. And then there's other parts where I'm like, oh, this is.
They're like, saying the lines that aren't there, Mike.
The idea of improv is cool. It's just like, I think Jack Black and Mos Def are falling flat on a lot of this.
I don't
stuff.
Even think like the dialogue. I mean, like them themselves, I don't think maybe they're improving, but I think the movie itself is like, not caring about structure or anything like that. Like it has like this weird sort of vibe about it. And it took me a while to kind of get into it. And I think until the middle half or the halfway through, I was like, it took me that long to kind of get onto it. And now I was like, way into it. More than I ever was, I think, which is interesting, I think. Maybe that's just where I'm at. Because I think I didn't really connect with it either. I think I was a little bit disappointed when it came out. Because I was feeling probably the same way at the time. Like, this is kind of weird and not really hitting right. But I don't know. It worked with me this time. And I thought the lines were really funny. I thought there's, and they're very throwaway and not very like in your face. And I thought that was interesting about it. Like,
can I recite a line that Danny Glover says early on in the movie?
Yeah.
And we could put this in later in post, Danny Glover saying this. My balls were slapping so hard, I had to scrape them off the ground and beg them to come home with me.
That was a good scene. I like that scene. I like Danny Glover a lot in this. He's probably my favorite.
I think they're all really good. And I mean, and one thing we should talk, I don't know if it's, there's a whole thing about, because Mos Def doesn't go by Mos Def anymore. I don't know if you knew that. He goes by,
oh, that's right,
Yoslin Bey, I think is how you say it. And I think it has to do with, I'm not even sure, but I remember thinking someone's like, don't refer to him as Mos Def anymore. I don't know. I remember hearing that, but I don't know. He's really good, I think, too. And I kind of wish that he still acted because I always liked him in movies.
Yeah, same here.
But yeah, I think they're all good. You didn't really like him, Mos Def and Jack Black, huh?
Are you looking at me? Looking at me?
Yeah, sorry.
I thought they were, the performances for the characters were okay, but I think like the comedy between them, like the stuff that felt improvised, like a lot of that back and forth, I didn't like it.
Wow.
I can appreciate
it,
that.
I thought it was like, when I say SNL, I know SNL's not improvised, but it had the vibe to me of like an SNL sketch that's like not working for me kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It was kind of, what didn't work for me was probably what you kind of mentioned in the beginning, Dave, like the whole, kind of the setup of like, and this is stuff that I feel like they kind of drop, that like they live near this power plant that like Jack Black's kind of obsessed with that he lives kind of next to, and they're like wearing like metal hats to like not get like radioactive stuff. And he ends up getting electrocuted and stuff. And there's the whole scene where they're like, they're painted like the fence. And I think it's
literally
really,
right.
I kind of like that part. That felt very Looney Tunes.
I do too. But like, I feel like all that changes. I feel like all that stuff is different. Like after the first
act. The movie definitely pivots, and it's almost like it can't wait to get through the reason why the tapes are magnetized. You know what I mean? Which, it almost seems like, I kind of wonder if this is a working backwards bit where it's just like, you know, like we need a reason for them to remake all these movies. Like,
should we say what this movie is about for anyone out there in the race who hasn't seen
it? Do you want to, you want to say what it's about? And then I want to talk about a little bit before it came out. This was an early good marketing campaign.
Oh, yeah. I want to hear about that. Okay, so Danny Glover runs a video store that sells VHS tapes, and I think it is still set in like 2007 when it came out, where it's like kind of weird they sell VHS tapes. And Yoslin Bey works for him at he's like kind of the assistant manager, and so they're running the video store. It's like not doing great. It's the classic like 80s thing of like the ski resort's going to be shut down. They're going to build like the prep dance hall or whatever on top of it. And
they're gentrifying the neighborhood.
And it actually is like a lot of that angle, I feel like, is very prescient for 2007 for like, it's not New York, but it's just outside New York. The idea of like, I was thinking of sort of like Brooklyn being gentrified around that time. Like there's like the white condo developers, like, I love that scene where it's like, we're going to tear down this like video store, which looks like old, but it looks like a beautiful building. And you see like the PowerPoint where the like rich white guy's like, look at what it'll be. And he like shows a thing where it's just a boring like white condo.
I love how they call it too. It's like they call it, like, they don't just say old posaic like condos or whatever, they put it like slums. Ye old or something, like old with an e at the end. Ye old posaic condos or something.
Prosaic condos. That's funny. So they basically like, okay, we gotta come up with the money in a week so to save our store from being demolished kind of thing. And Danny Glover goes on like a vision quest to find like the other how to save the business kind of thing.
Yeah, he's like studying like a blockbuster called West Coast Video, or Hollywood Video, basically.
Yeah,
West Coast Video.
And while he's off doing that, Yoslin Bey has to run the store, and Jack Black, the wacky friend, is involved in like a power plant explosion and magnetizes his body. And so when he walks into the store, he erases his magnetized body, erases all of the VHS tapes. So what do? They have to reshoot all the tapes as people check them out in like these bizarre recreations. And yeah, then of
like
course
20 like minute shorts basically.
The bizarre recreations themselves catch on and
they can become famous kind of.
Yeah. They become locally like a phenomenon, and Danny Glover comes back and is like, "What have you done?" and blah blah, and they, you know, save the store.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they do. That's the thing at the end. But they but that's the idea, yeah,
of
the,
yeah.
And there's a backdrop of this the thing I totally forgot about, of like this jazz musician, and that's like a, they're like combining people, it's like a fictional jazz musician, right, Mike? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they even say like at the end it's like,
yeah, why wasn't this or this? Yeah. Yeah, and it's like the whole idea is like Danny Glover, and it seems like there's a little bit of this hinting that he raised Mos Def or Yaslam, I have to remember that. But they had to like he like raised him. And that he like told him that for bedtime stories that this jazz musician lived in the building and all this kind of stuff, and that's all stuff
legend.
Yeah, when I first saw this, kind of maybe didn't really connect with me, and I kind of like was like, get to them making Ghostbusters. What's going on with this stuff?
And now, jazz.
Now I was like all about that stuff, and it was and that kind
of that's kind of the backbone of the movie. Like it opens with footage from. What you find out, I think that footage, right, it's what they're doing at the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
But it opens with, like, black and white documentary footage of, it's, I love the opening. It is really funny. Like, I think the first line is, like, you know, people always say that Harlem was the center of jazz in the 30s and 40s, but Harlem wasn't nothing. It was all about, like, it's Passaic, like New Jersey. Yeah, yeah. That's the real center of culture and jazz.
Yeah.
And I love the idea that, like, they're building up, like, the lore of this small town and, like, giving it, like, because maybe in real life the small town sucks and has nothing, and they're, like, trying to get some hometown pride and stuff. It's very
endearing. Some what you may call alternative facts.
All right, Dave.
You're messing up the thing. There's the whole line Mia Farrow gives at the end that we can rewrite our, you know, make our history or, you know, start a new history, whatever she says.
Back in 1939, a young man named Q lived here.
Yeah, right. Jesus. yeah, so it's, and there's a whole scene, something too, where Sigourney Weaver shows up to, like, shut them down because they're using the actual tapes from the. And that, you know, and they're
kind of a technicality.
It is
technicality because the tapes are erased. So regardless if they began as Ghostbusters or Rush Hour 2, I don't know if that really matters anymore. They're kind of null and void at that point, I would think. But
yeah, it's like it's a goofy thing. But it, they end up having to destroy the tapes, and then so the thing is that their idea is like, well, we'll make our own movie. And my thing is what got me really hard. This is skipping ahead. Was like, that's as a, like, someone making movies, this is what you do. You first, you replicate what you've seen, mm-hmm. you've done things that you've known before, you rip off stuff, and eventually you make your own thing. And that just like hit me so hard, and I was just like, fucking beautiful. And that's what just made me start like crying at the end when they're all, and the whole town is there at the end, and they're watching themselves, and they love seeing it. It reminded me of the end, the Fablemans and the Everything comes back to the Fablemans now. It's used to be Star Wars, now it's Fablemans. But they're all
thinking a little bit of like Cinema Paradiso too.
Cinema Paradiso, like all those movies, I just love and I cry every time I watch them. And it's like when everyone's there and seeing their selves on screen and what they made, I was like, oh my god, it's so awesome.
I just saw The Wind Rises, and you know, not too far off from that.
Well, I mean, it was a heartbreaking moment, like when they come in, like, we need to destroy all these tapes, and rather than just collect the tapes and destroy them somewhere else, it's like, no, we brought like a steamroller to the street, to the store, to smash all the tapes, to crush them all.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver was like, oh, we're the bad guys, I guess.
Yeah, that was funny. That was really funny. Like, oh, we're the bad guys. Like, as they're doing comically evil stuff.
I also thought it was funny that, I mean, obviously, Sigourney Weaver's in Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters, but I thought it was funny that when that scene happens when Sigourney Weaver, who comes in,
I wasn't even thinking about that. That's funny.
When she she represents like the studio interests and all that stuff. There's a line Mia Farrow in that same scene. It's just like, these movies have heart. They're not these formulaic what's its. And then it cuts to Sigourney Weaver like, yeah, I know. I was in the movie. Don't you think I saw Ghostbusters 2?
Yeah, it was.
I should point out, when I say Ghostbusters 2, I mean Ghostbusters
as well.
The sequel.
Also,
I don't want to suggest that Ghostbusters is a bad movie. And in fact, I like Ghostbusters number 2, too. So just put that out there. Yeah. It's not nearly as good as the first, but I just want to point that out there to get in front of any angry letters or emails.
What's wrong with Ghostbusters 2, Dave? yeah, so... Like, one thing leading up to this movie and what got me really stoked about it, I mean, this is,
Yeah, let's talk about 2007-era marketing.
Yeah, and so...
I'm not kidding. I am curious to hear
this. Well,
this
was early, like, beginning of YouTube shit. Like, the start, like, YouTube just started. And what they did, their whole... And I think the trailer for this movie is incredible. And one of the funniest trailers, like, ever. Where it sets up the movie so perfectly. There's not like, you don't see a Jack Buck getting electrocuted or anything, but it's just like the whole thing of like they're in the store and the whole scene of him erasing the tapes. One thing I wanted to say is how fun was like every time Jack Black walked by the camera, it all messed up and stuff. I just love that stuff.
That felt very Michel Gondry.
Yeah. Very just like breaking the third fourth wall kind of stuff.
And I love just how like absurd the premise is. Like it's super ridiculous.
But I love it too, though. It's like it's sort of
no, I know that's what I mean. Like I like that. I like that it's like just
it's a
like,
great pitch. It's like
it's
the
borderline
best...
like surrealist. Like how bizarre it is.
And I don't even like. I think for me watching it this time, I was like, they don't really even need to like. I don't need to even see Jack Black getting electrocuted to understand. Like, it's just like. It'd be funny if just he's magnetized and he like it's almost like the pitch is so easy and just like they accidentally erase all the tapes and need to recreate the movies in the rental store to stop from going out of business. It's like the perfect one pitch sentence, I feel like, ever.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a little bit of extra sauce that doesn't need to be here in the beginning of this movie a little bit. That's why I think it kind of but I do think it balances itself out.
And I wonder, but, like, this is totally just me guessing. But I wonder, like, how much of that extra sauce is coming from, like, Michel Gondry making a movie in, like, America, like, in Hollywood, maybe, where they're like, well, we gotta, like, explain a little bit more of, like,
It kind of just maybe feels like it's all... It just has a lot. There's just a lot in this movie. Like, it's just, like...
Radioactive pee.
Yeah, there's that whole thing where, like, the car is getting shaken by Jack Buck peeing in the gutter. It's crazy. And
all the everything metal is like being attracted to his urine streams.
But then he gets it all out. He gets all the magnetism out in his pee. That's how
it works.
Yeah. And it's funny because like it's only with Jack. It's like Jack Black is in his own weird surrealist movie in a weird way.
Yeah.
And anyway, the trailer for this movie was great and it got me so pumped. And then they had a whole kind of viral marketing thing for like people making their own Swedish movies, and Swedish is the term they use for
Swedish. A term that it's like it's not a real term; it's something in this movie they make up.
Yeah, and it's still I think a thing. Like, you can like Google like Swedish, you know, Last Jedi or something, and probably watch some recreation.
Is that basically the term they're using for the movies that they're like recreating?
Yeah. And so people were like making their own. They're having contests and stuff for like best ones. I remember watching tons of them on
YouTube. To be honest, like this all just sounds better than the movie. Like I think I might have preferred if Michael Gondry just like made or Michel Gondry just made like a bunch of these things and put them out.
He even did like his own version of the trailer that's Swedish. Like there's a Swedish version of the Kinder Wine trailer.
Itself. Oh wow. Yeah.
And I think Michel Gondry is the one in the trailer.
That's cool.
Kind of thing. So it's like, there's a lot of that stuff. And I remember just like, I was eating this shit up. I loved it. I was
this
like,
this would be a cool idea too, to like revisit. You could, this idea is evergreen. Like I'm just thinking of movies that have come out since then, like Mad Max, Fury Road, Swedish would be like amazing.
Yeah.
One of the Star Wars movies or
Like,
there's lots of stuff you could do.
And I think, like, what, too, was got me so good, too, like, especially with the trailer, is basically all it was kind of, there was little bits and pieces of the Sweden movies, but, like, them creating Ghostbusters and Mos Def being like, oh, I've been slimed, and, like, just, like, the you know, Slimer kind of disappearing, I was like, I got it perfectly.
In camera editing.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I did that, And then I knew exact, and I was obsessed with the Rush Hour movies at the, you know, around this time. And so, like, all that, like, them hanging on the monkey bars, I knew exactly what scenes they're doing, and just, like, that stuff was ingrained in my head. And so I was just so pumped for this movie. And I think I was kind of confused by it a little bit, just because when it came out. But now I still think it's a little bit of a strange movie, but I it got me good. And the first time that I don't know what it was, but what got me, like, kind of emotional was when they're coming back from shooting Rush Hour 2 and there's, like, a line outside the door, or not Rush Hour 2, it was after
RoboCop.
They're coming back from RoboCop and there's a line that I got choked up at that moment. It was crazy. I was like, wow, I can't believe this movie did this.
There's a big theme of the movie is, like, community coming together kind of thing, and, like, not even necessarily at first to, like, save the store, but just that the community is, like, discovering itself kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, a big part of it that they kind of, like, starts happening, and, well, once they do the Fats Waller documentary kind of towards the end, is people in the neighborhood start starring in the films. So then it's like, the neighborhood, like, is just, like, wanting to see themselves in the film. And yeah, there's, like, a big, I think, like, a big, probably, like, honestly, a bigger theme of this movie than anything else, even bigger than the just idea of recreating movies, is like a neighborhood kind of, like, discovering itself and discovering its own, like, stories and mythologies and stuff. And, like, that's stuff I love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same here. And to add to that, like, I think just the creativity of low budget filmmaking, you know what I mean? Like, there were so many parts, like, everything they did, I was like, oh, that's really clever. Like, when they do the Men in Black thing where they have just this revolving thing with a bunch of toy cars on, like, a circular thing, and it, you know, they rotate the camera so it looks like the, you know, the cars are whizzing by. Like, that was really clever. And just, like, I think
think about, like, something I'm torn on. So some of the movies they're making them, they have, like, little pop-up video style of, like, the movie, like, on the bottom. Did you? I can't tell if I.
Oh, on the, like, the, like, the titles would come by.
I can't tell how I
feel about
that. Like,
yeah. It almost felt like one of those things, like, if you remember back in the day, where, like, a compilation CD with, like, the different tracks going up and down, you know? I didn't mind that. I like that.
Coming from a music video background, it also kind of makes me think of, like, the title card on a music video on the bottom of the screen,
just
says the band and the song.
Well, I think that's my favorite. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is that montage of them creating everything, and I love how the scene plays out. It's like, the suggestion is that, you know, what you're seeing is actually, like, a bunch of different things, but it's all blended together into one scene when the camera's just sort of panning around. You see, like, Alma running around setting up shots for things and doing this and that. Like, really creative. Really creative.
It reminded me in a funny way of that scene in Babylon where they go to the silent film.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All the different studios filming different movies.
All at the same time, it all feels chaos. Like, yeah, chaos, yeah.
I it's funny you bring that up, the titles popping up. I think, I'm not sure I like it, actually. I think a little bit. But I get why they did it. It's pretty obscure, and it's also, like, and what I love about the movie is how the choice of scenes they choose for some of these things, where it's, like, not very obvious what the lines they would say, like, especially for, like, Ghostbusters, like, the ones that they would, like, remember. Like, and also, like recreating the commercial where Dana's in her apartment and the eggs are exploding isn't the first thing I think of when I think of Ghostbusters. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and so that's just, like, a funny, like, that's,
but
like,
that's
what
that's,
they choose.
That's
to.
Smart. I mean, this movie would be, it would not be nearly as good if they had just done, like, the big iconic scenes from every movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if a Ghostbusters is like, go cross the streams or something, and you're just hearing the quotes everyone knows, it wouldn't be as charming.
Yeah.
Well, and part of it, I imagine, has to do with, like, that they have no money. So it's like they have to pick things that are within their means.
Well, I think it's part of the characters, too, like what they remember about the movies and
stuff. Yeah. But I think if they had done, like, just iconic, like the most iconic quotable scenes from each movie, this would have felt more like a Super Bowl ad or something.
Like maybe like Clerks 3 if we get to that one.
Yeah, I don't know if Clerks 3 even exists, but
well, I'm saying like so, I mean, but that whole scene, the montages, I think it would be kind of fun to like figure out like what movie is that. But and then maybe like, and maybe you see later the tapes that they were going through, and what, like that would have been maybe a little bit more, I don't know, like clever, but I don't know. It's fun.
I think I'm landing on kind of liking it because I'm thinking of Michel Gondry's music video background, and like it kind of makes sense in that context.
Are you thinking maybe, Ryan, that this was maybe a studio note? Like, we gotta say what the movies are. People won't know.
Some of them are pretty like obscure, like, but it's like, but I think it would have been kind of fun to not see that because it's a little bit distracting. I'd rather like watch this crazy like camera pan to like where the actors are changing into different costumes.
There's a lot, like some of these shots are like, there's so much going on, and like you almost have to watch it a couple times to get it.
And there's a lot of I think the look of the movie used to look so good, like it's crazy, like they just like the there's so
just
many people
shooting on film, like
I
why
think
do
it's,
you think
it's shooting on film, the there's so many
real
people,
locations,
like the way that the just the exposure looks. Yeah, they're on a real street. And there's like a lot of people in there and stuff. It just looks incredible compared
to. They still make movies on real streets.
No, they do. But I was just saying, like a movie like I don't think a movie like this could get made at its budget. Basically, I think like it would look different, and it would be. I feel like these days, it'd look a little bit more green screen heavy and stuff, and not so art directed. Like where the camera pans out, and there's like tons of people on the street, and there's like lots of things happening in the background, and I don't know. It just looked amazing, incredible. Let me think. Okay, so you were talking about earlier, Dave, about like things that stuck out to you, and a lot of the things I wrote were just like lines kind of said. So like one of them I have is like this is toward the beginning, and you know, Danny Glover leaves a note to Mos Def to like keep Jerry out of the store, and they can't. He wrote it backwards because he wrote it on the train as he's going away, and something, it's just like Jack Black keeps saying, like, was he illiterate? Did he have parents? And he says, like, interesting. And there's just like things like that. Just were so throwaway. And
oh my God. Mr. Fletcher can't spell. That line is pretty good.
Yeah. Like I said in the beginning, is your VCR NTSC when they people come back and they're like, why is this tape blank? And I was like, people even know what that is, like, you know.
I also thought it was funny that after the tapes are erased, that one customer gets so enraged.
Oh yeah,
like I want to be reimbursed my dollar. It's like, are you kidding me?
What was she renting? Do you remember? It was Ghostbusters, right?
Yeah, Ghostbusters.
And then the other guy just picked two up. Fine, he's like, I'll take these.
He's like, ooh, two free movies. Ooh.
So Ghostbusters is the first one they do, and that kind of has the biggest montage. One of my favorite things is, so Mia Farrow's in this movie, which is pretty crazy. So it's like, you know, Rosemary's Baby herself. And she comes in wanting to rent Ghostbusters. And my favorite thing is that she has like a little book, like she's never heard of it. And she's like, oh, I just heard this was good. And she's kind of like, this is like on the list, you know? And so they're like, she's never
probably
seen it before.
Leonard Maltin's 1001 films you need to see.
Something like that. And I remember I remember people doing that when we worked at Hollywood Video, Dave. Remember like people coming in with like a paper with like they're like marking stuff off to watch?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that totally would have been my dad.
They were like, they were just like, do you have let's see here. Do you have like The Graduate? Like I never heard of it. This movie called The Graduate, like stuff like that. They would kind of. And it's like, oh yeah, of course, it's in here. And I love that about it. That reminded me, that gave me flashbacks. What other kind of things do I have? Do you have any kind of like little moments you wrote down, Dave, or things that you?
Well, like I said, like most of my notes are just lines that I thought were really good.
All the tapes are gone, and Jack Black's like, where? That was good.
It's also an interesting, this movie kind of serves as like an interesting time capsule piece for home media. Mm-hmm. Just because this came out in 2008, so this is a few years after VHS was gone, because if I remember correctly, what was the last VHS or the last big movie to be produced on VHS, I think, was Attack of the Clones, right?
The last, the one I remember is that the first major release to not be released on VHS was Revenge of the Sith.
That's right. That's right.
This is I have a good question for everybody. When in your lives did DVDs replace VHS?
The year 2000.
The year 2000.
What I remember because
you say
the
that
first,
so confidently. What
I remember
happened?
Because the first DVD I ever bought, I think my mom bought it for me, was X-Men. Which came out in 2000, and I remember putting it in the DVD. It was one of those cases where we had the movie before we got the DVD player. I bought X-Men in an Albertsons, when Albertsons still had video stores, if you can believe this. And we got the DVD player, and I remember being so enamored with the interactive menus. I was like, whoa, it's Cerebro, and I did Cerebro.
It had like, you could...
They never had that on VHS, and so if I remember right, Ryan, I think we started getting rid of all of our VHS. I want to say around 2005 or 2006. I think.
Did you work at Hollywood Video when they still had VHS?
Yeah,
right at the end. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we had the little reminders, like
you're old.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Yasin Bey.
You worked at a video store selling VHS.
Yeah, we had VHS for sale.
Oh, dude, I remember when we were getting rid of them. We were selling them all, I think, for $1 a piece. And this guy came in once, and he went to the special interest section, and you know, honestly, these are probably worth a good penny today. But he bought a shitload of Beatles VHSs that you probably can't find anymore. That probably aren't on DVD or streaming or anything.
You could probably get them for $3 now.
He bought so many tapes that I had to get one of the giant boxes and fill it up. It was a giant box worth of tapes that he bought, and it sucked because I had to like manually key in each one for the dollar sale.
Yeah, it was a pain in the ass. I remember that.
It was a pain in the ass, and I swear to God, this guy must have bought like 70 tapes. He bought a shitload of tapes.
That sounds cool.
And there was a line behind the guy, and it was like 12 o'clock on like a Wednesday or Thursday or something, and these people are just like, I want to rent my movie. I'm sorry.
And usually you're like the only one there during the day.
Yeah, too. Exactly. I was the only one there, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I got to help this customer with this 70 movies.
Yeah, I mean, I remember just the VHS section getting smaller and smaller, and we would tighten it as DVDs got farther and farther. You kept cramming them into like less rows, basically. But people were still renting.
It was probably 2000 for me, like the year 2000. I very distinctly have a memory of the first time I heard about DVD. Like someone, a friend, like family, like it was like my mom, me, friend, and their mom. And they were talking about how they got DVD player and DVDs. And I remember thinking I didn't understand what it was. Like, is this better? Does this something to do with your TV? Like, is cable going to be different now? Like, can I do all this stuff with cable TV? It what is this new revolution of home entertainment that's coming? I never really bought VHS tapes on my own, but I remember DVDs is when I started I'm getting my own media collection now.
Yeah.
Kind of funny. I remember people being mad that we didn't have Revenge of the Sith on VHS, and I was just like,
wow.
Because we still would get them. We'd get a few VHSs for movies still until then, and that was the first major release, and it was just like, I'm sorry, but Lucas was like, we don't want a landfill of Attack of the Clones like we already have, you know, because it was no one was buying Attack the Clones on VHS, and so they just decided not to make it for Revenge of the Sith.
We should point out too, for anyone unaware, younger listeners, the leap in picture quality from VHS to DVD was huge.
Very big, yeah.
Very huge. And also the idea, and things like special features existed on Laserdisc, but Laserdisc was just seemed like such a premium thing. No one had it. I feel like people didn't really discover special features.
We would have had Laserdisc if we were 10 years older, I bet.
Special features is a thing that it's kind of gone away now a bit, but at the time that was a huge selling point for DVDs. I mean, there was a whole industry of think of the Lord of the Rings movies where the special features become equally as important to buying the thing than the actual. And yeah, just like the convenience of it all, like being able to set up like subtitles or different languages.
Skip
and
to
like
a scene.
Skip to a scene. That was huge.
You didn't have to rewind it.
You could
that was
watch
huge.
Half a movie and then come back to it later and go right to.
Yeah, if your DVD player was able to, it would stay. It would say, "Do you want to resume?" and stuff. And that was a big thing too. Yeah,
and I remember too, like the first DVD player I had, and my main DVD player for basically my whole life of DVD, the DVD era, was the PS2, and like that was like a big thing.
That's what sold it.
Yeah, the fact that like the PlayStation 2 had a DVD player was like probably a big selling point in like a lot of younger people just like going all in on DVDs.
Yeah.
That must have been it because it, you know, the PS2 came out in what, 2000? Yeah. So that must have been it for us too, but I think we got a PS2 late. So
and the PS2 was like a good DVD player. Like it was
I
think it's like a better DVD player than a lot of ones you would just get as standalone DVD players.
Well, that's the thing with that though, when then you start getting widescreen TVs and that you couldn't change the PS2 to a widescreen TV though, and that drove me nuts eventually. I feel like
it's kind of funny, like PlayStation, you could really credit PlayStation to, I think, because DVDs had been around for I think 2 or 3 years before PS2 came out, so they're around, but I think they still were kind of like Laserdisc and like
and
it's just too expensive.
PS3 was a Blu-ray player.
That's what I was getting at. PS3 probably brought about the Blu-ray player, and it definitely killed HD DVD, which was like its competitor.
PS3 is like a weird reputation. I feel like people don't realize how successful that was. Like they sold more PS3s than Xbox 360s. It just had like a rock. I don't know. Maybe in America it didn't sell as well. I don't know exactly, but I do know like in total the PS3s sold the most out of that generation. So I have to imagine that was a big reason why Blu-rays won over HD DVDs.
I think they still should have adopted the name. They should have stole the name from
HD it. HD DVD.
I just would rather, make it. You know,
I think it's like, I suspect part of the reason is HD DVD sounds like a step up upgrade, and Blu-ray sounds like a whole brand new thing.
Well, the thing is that a Blu-ray is an HD DVD. It is a high definition digital video disc.
It sounds a lot cooler though. Like I think. It's like Laserdisc.
Yeah,
like,
but HD DVD stands for something. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's kind of a funny thing. Like to get back to the movie, like Danny Glover's whole plan, like, all right, I'm gonna go and basically spy on like a big chain video store to see what they're doing. It's like, oh, they have the current format of movies. I guess I should switch to those.
That is funny. he's like it's like whole new form where he's like zooming in. They're like renting Final Destination 3. He like sees it.
He's like, oh, I see. They have a lot of copies of popular movies that people want to rent. Interesting. Oh, they categorize movies. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I keep forgetting that lie. I don't want to go all the way back to Mia Farrow trying to rent Ghostbusters, but like Mos Def is like, Ghostbusters? Is that out? You know, says that like something. Like, so funny. I don't know. That's the whole Danny Glover's little side mission until he comes back and is just like.
He's like, well, doesn't he? He's like, we're only doing action and comedy movies.
Mm-hmm. That's all people rent now. Well, it's action and comedy.
Yeah, and then Mos Def's
no
like,
more of these special interest
documentaries.
Like, you
can't get rid of the silent films and stuff. Like they must have like, I mean, it seems like they have like nothing, but apparently they have a lot. They think it's just
well. At one point, when Sigourney Weaver and her crony come in, he says like, "Oh, they have like 200 tapes," which it doesn't look like they have 200 tapes in that store, but evidently they do.
You know, it's like that's probably part of it, just kind of like to make it. You know.
Should we talk about this? Might be a good segue to talk about how we feel about the video store.
Video store / thrift store.
Yeah, it's Be Kind.
This
Rewind.
Is my favorite store that we've seen, hands down.
One of the Mia Farrow's nephew calls it Fats Video, which I thought was cool. I was like, is that the name? And I'm like, oh, it's Be Kind Rewind Video. But I was like, that's kind of a good name, Fats Video. I kind of like that.
It is, yeah.
It's dirty. It's dingy. They sell records. He says he has. You can see it behind the glass on the counter.
Slim Jims.
It looks like that Mos Def is repairing VCRs back there.
The plumbing is not up to code.
The roof is not up to code.
Yeah.
I imagine it's sticky.
Yeah, it's sticky.
I thought it was funny how widely, because again, it doesn't seem like they have 200 tapes, because when you look at the shelves, like the tapes on the shelves are so spaced out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They don't have to suncoast. Well, I guess they are technically suncoasting. Have we explained that on the show before, what suncoasting is?
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, isn't that like just like putting them face forward?
Yeah, putting the tapes face forward, basically, yeah. so the customers can see them. Because oftentimes, and towards the end in Hollywood Video, we ran out of shelf space with DVDs and Blu-rays, and we would have to, I mean, there'd be so many shelves where it was just the spine of the movies, and then at the very end, to appease the corporate overlords, we suncoasted one movie.
Well, there's a thing.
We showed one movie.
I mean, I agree that it's easier to see the movies when they're like that. It's hard sometimes when they're spined, and the... but the thing was, is we did have so many more movies than Blockbuster, and Blockbuster suncoasted every single thing, but they had nothing compared to Hollywood had like a lot more movies. You know,
that's just a big reason, if you remember, why we sold a lot of our movies as previously viewed for like $5 a pop, because like we got to get rid of this stuff because we just don't have room for it.
It's a cool story. Dude, I saw Josie and the Pussycats on the shelf. That caught my eye. I saw there's a Blast from the Past poster. Speaking of, you know, the Brendan Fraser's aunts, whatever, he's back there.
You know what? Something I want to point out here, and this is common to, I think, almost every movie I've ever seen that depicts a video store. They claim to be in alphabetical order, but they are so not in alphabetical order when you look at them. And this drives me nuts, like in movies. It makes me want to grab the production designer and just like shake him. It's just like, you can clearly see that this aisle is comedy. So why is Jaws in here?
I don't know. Like,
they probably don't care. No, I mean, it's like, fine for this movie because it's clear they don't really give a shit.
I mean, there might be a bunch of shitty movies that are all like A's. You know, you want something like, what's a good movie that starts with A? There's like Amadeus. Okay, that's it. You know, like,
Adaptation.
About a boy.
About a boy. Yeah,
but you want different looking things. Like the mask caught my eye. Wanda. There's even like a drawing of the mask that says like, on the wall. It was like caught my eye. That was interesting. DVD of Final Destination 3. I remember seeing that. That's kind of the ones I caught my eye. I wouldn't say this is a very functional store. I think the one from Walking and Talking might, but this is very cool aesthetics for sure. Yeah.
This is the opposite of the Watermelon Woman store, where like the boss sucks too, because like a big selling point of this one is how cool the boss is.
Danny Glover is really cool, and he has a really warm presence and stuff.
Oh yeah,
and he's definitely at first not really supportive, but he becomes supportive quick when he realizes what's going on. And
well, just that moment where can we talk about the end of the movie?
Yeah, let's do it.
So Sigourney Weaver comes in, they destroy all the suited tapes, everything seems lost. But then, I want to make sure I say his name right. Yasin Bey is like, wait a minute. What if we just make our own movie, a new movie that they can't come after us for? We'll make it about Fats Waller. And as I said earlier, like, it doesn't matter if it's 100% true or accurate. It's like, it's the people coming together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they screen the movie. And because Jack Black is crazy, he drops the TV and says... And we didn't mention this scene. Like, initially, they before their screening, they go to the West Coast Video to steal the projector inside that store. They don't end up doing it, but
they keep breaking windows, though.
They keep breaking... Because if you recall, video stores back in the day had, like... I don't know how to describe it. Like, you had to go through one tiny room into another room to go into the actual video store. It was, like, all glass and stuff.
It's a security thing, and I think it's exact... The reason for it is exactly what happens in the movie, where they have to break through three windows, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I think that's probably the point, I think.
But anyway.
I have an urgent correction.
Oh.
Fats Waller is definitely real.
He is?
Yeah.
Wow.
He just didn't go to, Passaic, New Jersey. well, and the song at the end, Your Feet's Too Big, is a real
That's song a Fats Waller song.
From the 30s.
Wow, good. That's a big correction.
I thought that song was like a joke song. And
when you
like
said that, thing. Ryan, earlier, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Like there, I know that there was a jazz pianist named Fats Domino. Maybe they're just taking his
name
and combining
thinking.
It.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. I thought maybe he was referencing like a couple different jazz people, you know. But
now he is, and Fats Waller, you might, I don't know, just like a fun fact, his music was featured in prominently in Eraserhead.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Anyway, they get the projector. Anyway, they're unsuccessful in getting the projectors, so they're going to just have, like, you know, a small gathering of people in the video store to watch it on TV. But because Jack Black is crazy, he drops the TV. But thankfully, the guy who owns West Coast Video Store, you know, his heart grew 10 sizes because, again, this is the end of this movie is all about the community coming together, and he brings his what looks like a giant projector inside the store.
It's like
a pro
projector, like a presentation projector.
Just thinking about this is getting me teary-eyed when Alma like puts up the, and we'll talk about Alma in a second. She's my favorite character in the movie. She puts up this big white sheet. She takes the things down. She puts it up on the window and they're unaware, but you know, it's showing through the sheet. So everyone outside can also, it's unintentional, but everyone outside in the community can see the movie playing out. And during this moment, when everyone's getting, you know, enraptured by what they're seeing and the community, we all came together and made this thing. The guy responsible for tearing everything down comes like, you need to shut this off like in an hour. And we find out in this moment that they didn't raise enough money.
Yeah.
You know, and I like this moment. I like that they went this direction because realistically, there's no way that they could have.
they need to raise $60,000 in like a week or something.
Yeah, there's no way this community could have, you know, gathered that much money to do it. So it's a bittersweet ending, but it is still beautiful. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we're going to move into the projects and they're going to compensate
that, like,
us.
It kind of saves it from being overly saccharine that, you know,
yes,
that they're not going to save it.
I think so too. Yeah.
Well, you're talking about
Alma.
I don't know this actress, but Melanie Diaz.
She was great. She was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Oh, she's in Fruitvale Station too. Anyway, talking about the community, she's kind of the first person that they recruit, other than, like, you know, the guys that are always hanging out with them. And it's kind of like a goofy thing where, like, Jack Black's, you know, pulling the case of the not gays, basically, of like that.
there's a lot of the not gays in this.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
I kiss a guy. Oh,
it's sort of like everyone else is really, he's like the only one really. It's kind of like Jack Black seems to be the most problematic character in the movie, but like they're all kind of like, what's your fucking deal? Grow
it's
up.
It's a comedy
basically.
From 2007.
It was rough times. but basically, they're reenacting Rush Hour 2, and they need a girl to play, and so they kind of recruit her at the next door at the laundromat. And what I loved about it was how, and this is how it is, like everybody, I don't have too much experience making movies, but done a couple little fun shorts with friends and community people, and everybody wants to be a part of it. It's like, it's making them fucking movies. Like, I don't even, Carol Smald is like, yeah, I want to do that. That sounds fun.
Even as small as this lady being like, yeah, sure, you could use my dress.
Yeah. And so, and I can just right away. And that's like a whole thing. Like, you know, people want you to use their space. They will love it when, you know, you're making something like that. And it leads into the whole thing where the community just wants to be a part of the damn making this movie. And that's what got me with all these kids and they're in it and they're seeing themselves on the screen. And it was reminding me of, seeing there's been a couple, you know, stop motion films like Pinocchio and Wendell and Wild that were made in Portland, and going to see the movies in Portland, and then as the credits are rolling, I see people like pointing up to the screen that their names, like, they're going up on the screen and stuff, and it's like they're showing their friends, you know. And it's like, I was thinking of that and all these things, and just like how hard it is to freaking make a movie and how good it feels when it plays.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, that got me, I was just dying. It just was so amazing.
And the kid, when the, like, the little kids are like, this is our scene, shut up.
It reminded me of, like, I've brought up the Fablemans when, you know, Sammy's showing the beach show and all the, and everyone's getting into it, you know, kind of seeing themselves on the screen. And it's a,
Oh, go ahead, Ryan.
It's just a magical thing. And, like, especially, I mean, now it's, yeah, this is a little bit before everyone had freaking camera phones and got used to themselves seeing themselves in video and pictures, really. So it's like, you know, still relatively like a magical thing.
And it, yeah, it's magical. That is definitely the right word. Because it's like that, to mention the Fablemans, there's that scene when during the beach party where he starts filming like birds and stuff. Then he's like, and then he separately, he puts ice cream on people's faces and they're like, why are you doing this? Trust me, you'll get it. It'll look great in the movie. And then, you know, it when they show the movie later, it looks like a bird's pooping on their head.
Yeah.
Like that. And there's so many moments like that in this movie where they're playing with fireworks and, oh, one thing I want to mention, I love this scene. They're reenacting a guy getting shot in the head. So he gets shot, and then like there's a cut, and then there's like a big pizza behind his head.
They did that a couple times. There was a
and I love that. And again, like that scene when they're all watching the movie and they're waiting for the moment where they're like, because if for anyone who's ever made a movie or anything like that or a short, like I can't tell you how magical it is when you set up something that. When you're there on the day filming it, it seems weird. It's all separate. You know, you're like, is this really going to work? And it's even though it's a simple thing, showing something like that where suddenly like the pizza appears behind the head and you realize like, oh, that's like it's supposed to be like a blood pile. Like when you see it happen on screen, it's a little thing, but it means a lot. You're like, it worked. You know what I mean?
And I think like all of this stuff is bigger than even just movies. Like I think that this applies to just like doing anything creative, like when you're doing a creative project, and then the satisfaction you get of like seeing it all come together, like whether it's writing or music or working on your car that you love, like anything. It could be anything.
You're driving that car finally that you've been working on. Something.
Like it's bigger than just movies. Not to diminish movies.
No, that's what I appreciate about the movie too, is that it's kind of like a secret. What it's about, sort of, you know?
It's about community and I think to a large degree creativity and just I think that's what wins me over for this movie. Like I totally get where you're coming from, Mike, not really getting on board with the Looney Tunes-esque comedy in the beginning. You're like, what is this? But when the movie makes that pivot, like in after the first third or so, like it gets me, man.
I think maybe like I don't want to be overly negative on it. I think maybe I'm more critical of it because there's so much promise in the other stuff. Like for me, this is like a 3-star movie that could be a 5-star movie with like another, you know, a different script maybe for some of it.
I can agree. I kind of with you though. I'm kind of with you with that. I think I'd probably put a little bit more, but it's like, I agree that it's a little bit maybe too loose, and I think it was going for that. And I think, like I said, it's a jazz set, baby, but it's maybe a little too. Maybe the screws need to be turned a little bit more, but I kind of like that it's loose too. So I'm a little bit torn. And I think the movie though, by the end, it ends up coming together. It's like one of those things where it's a fucking mess. I would agree. It's a mess until it kind of like just works at the end. And it just like, I don't know. And I love that it's sort of like, doesn't really get into like, what's this relationship with Mia Farrow and like Danny Glover and maybe it feels like it stuff is missing, but maybe that's the intention. I don't know. It's just like a snapshot of things.
It's interesting, like how you know, that this is coming from like a white French filmmaker, like how diverse this movie is, and like how it's kind of like focused on like the African American experience. Like that, I don't know. That was just something interesting I thought of, like seeing this. Like I don't know if you would see this movie and necessarily expect it was made by a white French dude.
Well, it's one of those things is like there's a whole running gag about Driving Miss Daisy.
And, Reese is like, hey, this movie is kind of condescending.
I just saw Spike Lee's face in Mos Def when she's like wanting him to recreate, you know, Swede, the movie, and I could just see just so many years of just, you know, like, oh God, this won the Oscar over Don't Do the Right Thing. Like, just like,
did it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spike Lee just
sick.
Yeah. And do you want to hear something really sad, even more saddening?
Yeah, I do.
Decades later, Spike Lee was, I think he lost the Best Picture to Green Book, which is basically which is a very similar movie to Driving Miss Daisy in a lot of respects.
I remember that. That was the Black Klansman, right?
And he's just like, I can't remember his line. Maybe we can insert it in here. He's like, I can't fucking win against these movies, but people driving like these racist movies about driving old ladies or whatever. I can't do it. Every time I get an Oscar nod, this stupid movie comes in and just swipes.
Someone's driving someone racist.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's just like, both times. It's crazy. So, I just saw his face in that, and I was thinking, I had flashbacks to thinking of that. But and there's some tricky stuff with Jack Black, and he's doing, you know, Jackie Chan's voice, but I don't know.
Oh, God, like, yeah, and he's doing, like, the eyes, whatever.
But I don't know, it's like, I don't know.
Doing a lot of,
it's sort of part of it.
Mispronouncing R's and L's or whatever.
Yeah.
There's some good, you know, good as in air quotes, sarcastic air quotes, Jack Black, ironic blackface going on.
That's tough, too, yeah. But it's like, you know, everyone knows the movie stops dead in its tracks to be like,
You can't do that.
It's like a record scratch.
And I kind of love like that. It's just like Danny Glover's like, come out here, and they're in the street, and you can see him. He's just like explaining like just like history to him, basically. Which is kind of it's a tough gag, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not the one to comment on if it works or not, I guess, but it's something. Because he's trying to play. He's like, I'm not fat. He's like, most Steph isn't can't play Fats Domino. I'm the fat one, you know. But yeah, you can't, dude. I'm trying to think where Jack Black was at this time.
This would have been probably a few years after
School of Rock, which was a huge hit.
Yeah, this was probably the height of Jack Black. Like he's probably coming right up. This is around his King Kong era. Like this is like Jack Black is maybe a movie star. Like,
mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, he was huge. This is probably arguably his peak. Like a ton of movies. Nacho Libre was around this time. Like I said, School of Rock, King Kong. He was in a ton of stuff. A movie that I maybe we could talk about this like on a future, like on a Christmas episode or whatever. But he was in a movie called The Holiday, which I kind of like.
Oh yeah, The Holiday.
I mean,
which is around this time.
We should do that someday. I'm curious to revisit it, and then we have to do the whole game of which story do you prefer? Do you prefer or which? I guess relationship do you ship? Do you ship the Winslet Jack Black or the Cameron Diaz Jude Law one?
Yeah, maybe we could do some film festival that's only focused on movies like that, where it's several competing relationships. There's Love Actually would be in that camp, right? The Holiday, maybe Four Weddings or something.
maybe next February we can do like a rom com month or something.
Yeah, I'm trying to see what other kind of thing what he was doing. But yeah, the thing is, he's still, you know, he's in some of those biggest movies, those freaking Jumanji
movies. He's huge now,
but
I feel like he's like he did kind of transition to more voice acting.
Yeah,
like, you know, the Kung Fu Pandas.
Well, he's got kids and now too, like Bowser. So I gotta imagine. He has kids too, so I gotta imagine he's trying to be more flexible. This
as he has aged, he has really just like looked like an insane person.
He's become like a weird character.
You can't cast this. You can't cast Jack Black as he looks like in 2023 into like any leading role.
I'm trying to think of when's the last time he was kind of played like a serious role.
King Kong
was that probably it.
No, I think that he was against type in that movie for sure.
Wasn't The Holiday after King Kong?
Yeah, I think year after.
I would say that's a serious role.
Or like Bernie. Remember, he's still.
Oh, Bernie, yeah.
Remember that?
Bernie was really good.
He was good in that.
He does a lot of video game voice acting, too. Yeah. I've like seen him.
He played the voice of Officer Dick in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 that came out for the more modern systems like PS4.
Oh, wow. They gave him a voice.
That was just like,
I feel like he has like you'd have like Tony Hawk on his YouTube channel to like bullshit stuff.
He was in Psychonauts 2. That was a good game.
I like Jack, but what are we talking about? He was Bowser, you know, in
Bowser. I like Jack Black. I think I don't like him in this movie very much, but I do like him.
Yeah, he kind of works. He fits really well. You can probably do a whole bunch of movies of like, is there another one other than High Fidelity where it's like the coworker, the crazy buddy that works? He's like, you know, I guess he's like the second lead in this, really. But
he kind of almost in a way like is that same character.
Is he the crazy buddy in Saving Silverman?
Yeah, he's a crazy buddy in that.
That was kind of his role for a while, but then
What about Shallow Hal? Where does that fit in with Jack Black?
That's a tough one.
Is that like we just don't talk about Shallow
Hal? Do you know what that's about? Do you know that one? Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Are you joking?
I saw it back in the day.
I was just asking if you'd seen it before, because it's
no, I have seen it, and that's why I'm just like, where does that fit in
this
conversation?
I just don't think he talks about it, you know.
No one should talk about that movie.
It's so funny to bring that up. That was a Farrelly Brothers movie who also directed Green Book.
It all comes back to Green Book.
It all comes back to that damn movie.
I agree almost with everything you're saying, Mike, and stuff. It's like I can't really defend anything about it, but I think I'm...
You should defend the blackface, Ren.
Yeah, right. Jesus. but I'm like, I'm a little bit like middle ground with this, but I think I do love the ending, and I love the stuff with the community and just like, just how happy everyone is to see themselves up on screen is such a cool thing. So that really sets it up and puts it up a star and a half for me, I think, for sure.
If we're going star rating on the movie, I think I'm thinking maybe like 3.5 or so. Because again, that first bit with the Looney Tunes humor is a little rough, but
it just doesn't really like pay off. I guess stuff, because it does change. But we rate the Video Store though. So what do you rate that in videotapes?
I'm gonna give the Video Store itself 9 tapes.
Wow,
my highest rating yet. Okay,
yeah, it's sticky. It's got a cool owner.
It's different than other ones. They have
it's
Sweden.
Different. Yeah, they like say like they have special interest stuff like
silent,
documentaries
silent
and
films,
like silent films. Yeah, I could probably watch like some Filmversation movies here.
Well, I bet the Watermelon Woman one. They seem to have a good.
They have Watermelon Woman.
Yeah,
I bet they have it.
Yeah.
Are you saying the Watermelon Woman would also have?
Yeah, but you're probably right. They probably do have the movie too.
I'm going to split. I'm going to go in the middle here and say a 5 because I got
five.
I got us 5 videotapes because I
are
got
you concerned
a, you know,
about
I still I can recognize the heart. There's heart involved, but at the same time, I want to watch Revenge of the Sith on DVD. You don't got it. So I can't in
wow,
good conscience.
They got over here just wants the algorithm to feed him the latest DVDs. Doesn't appreciate the heart of a sticky.
Well, imagine
old,
going in the store and you're like, store. "Can I rent Ghostbusters?" And the guy says, "Is that even out yet?" I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, he's trying to cover that it's.
No,
it's
I know,
up.
I know. I'm just joking.
I know that's such a funny line, though. Is that? It's like the most famous. It's probably like the most sold VHS probably ever. It's probably one of. It's probably like Back to the Future and Ghostbusters.
Oh, that would be Titanic.
Oh, Lion King is. That was a
Lion King,
too.
Which they
Lion
drop
King
in the
is.
Movie.
They do
Lion
talk
King
a lot about Lion
cameo.
King.
That's a good little. You're right, Adair. I think she's the secret sauce too in the movie. I think she's a great character that comes in. This was fun. I'm glad that Kara recommended this again because this was on the maybe pile because I knew it wasn't the 90s, but it's residual. It's
the 90s.
It's yeah. This movie could have been take place in the 90s. I think. I mean, it would have missed the little like new format kind of swing. Idea, but it's the end of the 90s. This movie's sort of like that, or the end of an era, really. This movie's
the VHS era,
Video Store era. I mean, the Video,
yeah,
the
video
store
era
is
at
closed,
yeah,
at the end of it.
So this is a good big one for that. And but there is one more, and this is more of a for the next episode. Should we tease what's next?
And this is the final one, right?
I'm afraid. I've heard hints of what might be coming up next, and I'm nervous to watch this.
It's all led to this.
It's all led to this.
Everything, arguably. The entire show has led
to
this.
And, yeah, it's really the show that we need to talk about Kevin, really. That's not the movie we're seeing.
Seeing the movie we
need
to talk about.
Not the
Ezra
Miller movie.
But we need to talk about
it. Yeah. And this is... we somehow found it. Cody found it in the wasteland. Somehow found that there was a Clerks 3 made, and I think we all got into this type of thing because of pot, you know, of Kevin himself. That's probably inspired us to do Video Store stuff. We've been talking about Clerks since the beginning with Video Store movies and podcasting. And so I wanted to talk about Clerks 3 and just maybe Kevin in general, really our thoughts. I mean, maybe even the whole Clerks shebang, you know.
I remember that was a sad day in the store when we got that from Cody, because I think we all thought it was going to be Avatar 3, but then we dusted off a little more and saw it was Clerks 3.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, At one point, I would have been like, "This is I'm excited to watch this," and so it's gonna be interesting. And I'm curious to see.
Well,
I'm sorry to put you guys through this, but this is the last of it.
I want to see it. I have to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I mean, obviously, Clerks 1 was like a huge touchstone movie for me growing up.
Yeah.
I really loved Clerks 2. I thought, speaking of heart, I thought that movie had a ton of heart. That's like the main thing that's great about Clerks 2. I know nothing about Clerks 3, so yeah, I'm interested.
No, keep your expectations low, but maybe you'll like it more than. But I would say, yeah, that'll be the last stop on this Federation extravaganza. Was there like some sort of wrestling tour or something like that? Just like WrestleMania, right? You know, is that like
the road to Clerks 3?
Yeah,
is like SmackDown like the big thing at the end? Like,
hell no. Yeah, I like the road. It kind of sounds like we're the that's final like a saying, round. I the think final in WWF, round.
Like road to WrestleMania. I think something like that. WrestleMania is the big one of the year, if I recall.
Road to Clerks-a-mania.
We'll see if Clerks gets the SmackDown or the Body Slam.
Oh my God! He pulled the Snoochie Boochies move.
Well, thanks guys for going checking out this sticky store. But we're gonna have to. We'll see you next time with Clerks 3. Have a good one.
I want to be reimbursed my dollar.
Shut up.
We got a real rage in the cage, cause we need to talk about Kevin Smith, that is. We're watching Clerks 3 for the ultimate finale of Stone Cold Ryan's Winter Film Fest Federation in the middle of spring. It's basically summer. Enter the cage, if you dare.
I'm getting the hang of this.